Welcome to The Fight with Teddy Atlas, presented by Dynamic Striking. I'm Ken Rideout, joined as always by the voice of all combat sports, the legend, Teddy Atlas. Teddy, how you doing?
Good. I'll be doing good, even better when Thursday passes, God willing. Get our foundation big fundraiser done. Foundation, Dr. Atlas Foundation dinner is the 16th, always the Thursday before Thanksgiving, and we're sold out, so I'm very grateful. We've been sold out. So I'm very grateful to that. People coming across the country, you guys are coming. And, you know, all these celebrities that are coming, and the Tony Dances and the Tracy Morgans and the Larry Holmes. And I mean, just one after another. There's so many of them. I mean, Stephen A. and Max Kellerman and just all the ESPN great people that are working there, have been working there with me, Sal Palantonio, just one after another. And every year for 27 years, they've come. Just good people. I mean, that's what makes them a celebrity, is that they use that power to make other people's lives better. That'll make anyone a celebrity, for me at least, and a special person, where we can continue to help people that need help, you know, whether it's with a food pantry, flying a, you know, a child out of state, a sick child that their family doesn't have the insurance that covers their treatment in state. They have to fly out of state. We fly them out of state. You know, we even cover surgeries, small surgeries that sometimes a very specific doctor has to do it. There's, you know, for a very specific surgery, and the doctor doesn't accept insurance. You know, that's a reality. So we can step in and then pay for that for the parents that can't get it done and have to get it done because their child needs that surgery. And also the social programs, where we bring mental health programs into the very difficult situations at in at-risk schools, Title I schools. In New York, that means a family making less than $35,000 a year. So you have, you know, poverty. You have a lot of, you don't have fathers. You have problems. And that's what we deal with. That's where we go. And we've been doing it for 27 years. And we're going there. We're bringing mental health programs with psychologists, psychiatrists, mentors, you know, anti-bullying, all the things that are needed to combat these problems in these areas, in the schools and in these areas where it's where they need help in those ways. And you know, depression, you know, just a myriad of things that the mental health you know, that deals with mental health, which is still unknown compared to a lot of the other physical ailments that, you know, our great doctors and scientists deal with. But the mental health is still one that, you know, doesn't get enough help in those areas sometimes. And it's a very serious issue. I mean, if you just look at the news every night, you see how serious it is when you see the homeless people. Most of them that could be attributed to mental health problems, where they're, you know, out on the streets, and then you see the violence, where you see these mentally ill homeless people pushing people onto subway tracks, and again, those people need help. So anyway, we can't do it without, you know, it takes a village, right? We can't do it without people. We're a collective effort. And for 27 years, we've been able to put together millions and millions of dollars to get directly to people that need it. That's the thing I feel maybe the best about. Two parts of it. One is that we don't make you go through jumping through hoops to get help. We verify it. We get the help to you. We don't want you to lose more than you lost when you come to us already. We don't want you to lose your pride, your dignity. We don't want you to go through all that. We verified, we take care of it. And the other thing I feel, you know, proud of is we don't have those administrative costs that a lot of these great organizations have, you know, where you find out that 4% goes to the actual, you know, whether it's a whether it's for a cure or, you know, whatever it is, but 4 or 5% goes to it and the rest goes to administrative costs. We barely have. We have one paid employee and we have a small office. That's it. And we've become pretty big. And yet we've been able to still work with volunteer-based, you know, help other than a one paid employee. And she's tremendously underpaid, I must say. But I give her a lot of love and I buy her lunch a lot. So that makes up for it, I guess.
Well, Teddy, for the people listening, Rob is going to be giving away 2 sets of 2 tickets to a premier table at the dinner. Go to the Fight with Teddy Atlas Twitter and Instagram handles. Follow the accounts and look for details there today or tomorrow for how you can win those 2 sets of 2 tickets. So 4 total tickets, 2 sets of 2. And Rob's going to be running that from the social channels. So go check that out. If you're in the New York area and you'd like to come and say hello and attend the dinner, we'd love to see some of the fans there. And those tickets will be made available.
Yeah, that'd be great. We're going to have, you know, besides the entertainment world and Sid Rosenberg, the great radio guy, but besides the entertainment world and, you know, the sports world, which we have well covered as, again, we're blessed. We do every year that the celebrities know where the money goes and they support it. And I couldn't be more grateful for them. But we'll also have a good coverage with the boxing world. Paulie Malignaggi and Chris Algieri, Larry Holmes, Iran Barkley, the former middleweight champ who knocked out Tommy Hearns, actually beat Tommy Hearns twice, the great Tommy Hearns. You know, and also Rashad, I don't want to mispronounce his last name, the great UFC Hall of Famer who also now does commentary.
Rashad Evans?
Yeah, Rashad Evans, yep. He's not only is he a great, you know, MMA champion and former champion and Hall of Famer. He's a great commentator and a great person. He's going to be there and hopefully a few other people from the UFC MMA world will be there too. I know Adesanya's manager, who's really a good guy, reached out. We were together in Saudi Arabia and he talked to my son about it, so he reached out to my son to see if he could get Aljamain Sterling, Sterling the former.
Aljamain Sterling,
the former champion. If he could get him there and a few others, so we're still waiting for confirmation on that. But either way, it'll be a good night. It'll be a night where hopefully you enjoy it, you have a great time, and most important for me is, you'll walk away knowing why you were there. So, we know why we're here. We're here to bring all the dimensions of the fights, every dimension possible. We had a DAZN Eddie Hearn promotion with boxing, with an undefeated fighter, with a very close decision. Eddie Hearn wasn't thrilled about how his man looked. He was very honest about it. So was his trainer. But we'll talk about that. And then we'll talk about the great UFC card, which I'll tell you, you remember that movie, Ken, Night of the Condor?
Yep.
This was Night of the KO. I mean, wow. I can't remember the last time the main card, every single fight was a KO. I think, like, tell me if I'm wrong, my math is off a little bit, but I think there was 5 main fights, and we're going to cover them all, but I think 4 of them might have been the first round, and 1 was second round.
3 in the first, okay. 2 in the second.
All right, 2 in the second. Wow. I don't mind it. I mean, I know the guys get knocked out too, but I don't mind it in a way that it makes the night a little earlier. You know, because I'm up doing work and, you know, writing it down and going over it and tweeting and all that. So an earlier night is well received by the Atlas household. I'm not keeping everyone awake, but yeah, it was a good night of fighting. It really was. And also, before I hand it off to you to bring us to it, I should remind people that, well, you guys, you and Ken are gracious enough to come in for the dinner. You're going to stay over. We're going to do fight plans in the gym where we always do with the great Martin Snow, with Trinity Boxing Club in Manhattan. We're going to do it there. So we'll have them, you know, for those fights. The ones we're doing it are is Andrade and Benavides, and also the other one that we'll be doing it on will be, what is it?
Pro Gray and Haney.
Yeah, Pro Gray and Haney. So two fights that obviously are important fights, and fights that I think you, that's what we do it for, you, the audience, will be looking to see and looking to see what the breakdowns are. Our record has been good with those. If you go to my bookie, you've done pretty good this quarter, we'll say, right? You've done pretty good. You've
Definitely.
Got some extra money for Christmas if you've been listening to us and going to my bookie with if you have a little extra to play with. If not, you shouldn't go there.
That's for sure. Well, let's jump into it. Like you said, the zone card, Shahbaz Masood edges Jose San Martin in a close split decision win. I'm sure that to Eddie Hearn's point, at coming in at 11-0 with four knockouts, they probably thought Shahbaz was going to walk right through a 34-6-1 Jose San Martin, but he got a very, very close split decision win in the 10-round fight. What'd you think? How'd you like it? And did the refs get it right? And did the judges get it right?
One didn't get it right. He should have his license immediately taken away, and he would.
Luigi Boscarelli, 98-92 for Shahbaz. He clearly wants to work for Eddie again.
He shouldn't work for anybody again unless maybe as a short order cook somewhere. I guess maybe. I don't know if he can make eggs, but he can't make scorecards. Not my world, and not in anybody's world, I don't think, that's honest about it. If I get the national commission I'm pushing for, he will get a pink slip on Monday. He will. There'll be a lot of pink slips.
He'll get a note in his mailbox that just says, "See me after class."
Yeah, there'll be a lot of those notes, quite frankly, that'll be going out. We'll be killing a lot of trees to get all those notes out. But to answer your question, and for the question that people want to hear, Masood, first of all, he's got a difficult style, and it's hard to look good with him and not, you know, his style's not conducive, really, to making exciting fights. He I think he's similar, not as developed at all, but as similar in some ways to a Shakur Stevenson, who controls range and very defensive-minded, very streamlined with what he does, doesn't waste anything at all. Very cerebral, but very contained. Very contained, very controlled. He controls distance. He counters you coming in. You know, you come in 6 inches. You've heard me say it again before. He goes back 9 inches. He looks to catch you. He likes to, you know, it's all about keeping space, you know. And while he's keeping space where he can work and keep you from working or catch you before you get to him, he does go to the body pretty good. I was surprised with that. And he does that. It's hard to get close to him without being caught, you know, on the way in. And really, to beat him, you have to step with him, Ken. As I talk about before many times, where, you know, he's predictable in his approach. And he'll go straight back. You got to time him. You got to maybe feint him to go too soon and then go with him. But you got to go with him. And you can catch him on a straight line, going straight back sometimes. And then when you do get in, you got to work your. You know, you got to make your hay while the sun is shining. And you get in there, you got to keep your hands free. You got to pound the body, then go up to the head. You got to be busy when you're inside. You can't get tied up inside. You can't smother yourself inside. You work like heck to get there. You got to do something when you get there. And listen, his opponent, Stan Martin, he did that. He did that a lot. But early on, although Stan Martin was aggressive the whole night, he wasn't effectively aggressive until later in the fight. Then, because that's how it works. Part of what you depend on, part of your style, part of your qualities is to bring pressure. You know, if that's one of the assets that you bring is just to apply pressure for the most part, it takes time for that to work. You know, it's like boiling a pot of water. It takes time for the water to evaporate. It doesn't happen in 10 seconds. And it's the same thing with applying pressure if you're a fighter. It takes rounds. It takes rounds to soften a guy up, to wear the guy down, to break the guy down, start to be effective, to see some of the work pay off and to pay dividends. I always say, you know, going to the body, applying pressure is like putting your money into CDs in a bank where you're gonna get interest with time. Yeah, and it's the same thing. You're going to get interest with rounds. You keep applying pressure, you usually see the payoff later in the fight. And you saw some of that with Sam Martin later in the fight where you started. But early on, not as much. And so I had it where Masood was obviously using his jab. He uses that uppercut well. You know, he starts off moving laterally on the outside to keep you off balance. Then he controls straight away on you, the way I said, in and out. The uppercut is a big, I think it's a big weapon for him with the style, and it's a big weapon for him against the shorter man that he had in front of him the other night, where the shorter man is always coming in a predictable manner, this front door. The uppercut can catch the shorter man. So he looked for that, and he's got a predictability, Masood. You know, he, for the most part, that's what he is. You know, he's out in front of you, you know, tries to control you with the jab, controls range, steps out, looks the counter. He'll sit inside in a box with you once in a while, in the kitchen with you every once in a while. He'll do that, and he did it later in the fight, which I think he needed to in the last round. And he did well with it. So he showed that dimension and that heart and belief and mental toughness to do that in spots. But for the most part, he's a guy who's, you know, he's going to be careful. He's going to be the surgeon. He wants to be a surgeon. He wants to surgically take you apart as you're trying to come in and try to make sure that, you know, the scalpel doesn't cut him by accident. So I say he's one-dimensional with that, and he might have to add dimensions. His opponent was one-dimensional with the pressure, always coming. So his trainer, Masood's trainer, you know, Ben Davidson, he's a phenomena. I tell you, it's really amazing when I see him because he's everywhere now, just like Eddie Hearn. Eddie Hearn is front and center. Every time you put one of their shows on, he is, my goodness, he is there. You know, sometimes I think he's gonna be the ring announcer too. I mean, he is front and center. You can't miss him. And look, he does all the work over there. He's the big guy over there, him and Warren, but really him does most of it. And although Warren's got the big boy, he's got the guy you want. He's got Fury. But Hearn's got some pretty big boys too, you know, like Joshua and the rest of them. And Ben Davidson, every time you watch a fight across the pond, it seems like you see him in the corner now. It's really amazing. This guy came out of nowhere. He first showed up on the scene, as far as I know. His first fighter was Tyson Fury, out of nowhere. And now he's everywhere. I mean, and he was more of a life coach friend that really did help Tyson Fury. But now he's, you know, he's a legitimate, I mean, trainer who's in the corners with top fighters all the time. So He was there. The fight was, it's not Ali Frazier, but the styles were Ali Frazier. You know, obviously Masood being Ali. And Sam Martin, as I said, the pressure paid off a little bit. He was much busier in the ninth round. He was being much more effective late in the ninth. Because, like I said earlier, some rounds he was just being aggressive, but not really effectively aggressive. Down the stretch, he got some of that done more, where he was more effective. And I think it was a real good 10th round. Mossad stayed inside more, as I said earlier. And matter of fact, he stayed in for the most part the whole round. And he did some very good work. So he did show me that dimension and that, as I said, that mentality where he's willing to go in the pocket and stay there with you, where he was, countering and picking spots, landing nice short shots. It was definitely the quantity of Sam Martin for the most part versus the quality shots of Masood. The only complaint, I have no problem Masood getting a close fight. It was close. I have no problem because he probably landed the cleaner shots. And like I said, he controlled range for a lot of the fight and was placing shots pretty well, but definitely was outworked. And that's why a lot of people thought maybe that Sam Martin actually won, but I give it to Mossad. It was a criminal score, the 98-92. The other two scores, 96-94, that's fine. I don't give fights just for throwing punches and being aggressive. I'm looking to see who's landing. But it was, as I said, it was a very close fight. Credit to Eddie Hearn. I think he needed to be honest because he depends on the fans to believe him when he puts a fight on. So he's got to be honest. And he was honest. Him and Ben Davidson, they said that, it was a close fight. They weren't happy or thrilled with the performance of their man. Matter of fact, Eddie Hearn went as far to say, hey, he's going to have to be a lot better if he's going to want to be a player with the big boys, in this business. He's going to have to be a lot better. I think part of that for Eddie, he's a promoter, right? So I think part of that is attached, Ken, to really what he's saying is, yeah, you got to be more exciting. You got to be better. You got to be busier. You can't be just fighting with this style and making close fights. You got to be busier. You got to go out there. You got to sell out a little more because otherwise you're not going to make money and I'm not going to be able to make money with you. I think that it's attached to that. That if you don't get a more excitement to your style, or at least a little bit more, if you don't put a little bit of high test in your gas tank to start doing a little bit more than just being that surgical guy, that guy who doesn't waste anything. If you don't start doing more, it's going to be hard for me to promote you and make money. Because you also have to be entertaining. So I think that was attached to it. I would stand on a book of Bibles that I was right about that. But Hearn did say, you got to be better. And the last thing I say is, it's always the same MO with these fighters. Who are the favorites? With the promoter, of course, Mossad is with Hearn. He's the A side, and when they get a decision in a close fight, one judge always goes big for the house fighter to make sure that they didn't screw up, that if things tighten up, they're good. They're way out ahead of it, way out ahead of it. So that's the security. And then the other two, score it close. And it's like they take turns. Okay, you take the house fighter this time. I'll take the B side this time. And it's like clockwork. It really is. So that's a problem. A national commission would be the only place that could get really, truly solved. But at the end of the day, I don't know. It was a interesting enough fight for me to watch an 11-0 fighter going through what he had to go through to, you know, at this stage in his career, fighting a tough fight, a fight that, you know, could have gotten away from him, testing him a little bit. I have no doubt that at the end of the day, Mossad will benefit from that experience, and we'll see. You know, we'll see. But the UFC, you didn't have to worry about boring or not scintillating fights. You didn't have to worry. You never have to worry about that. But you definitely didn't have to worry about it because you got fans like knockouts, right? You go to a baseball game, you want to see home runs. You go to a fight, you want to see knockouts. Well, you, if that's your taste, you were very, very, very well rewarded and satisfied Saturday night from Madison Square Garden, where the UFC gave you all those knockouts, one after another.
That's for sure, starting with the pop that Donald Trump got walking in with Kid Rock and
that was
Tucker
incredible.
Carlson.
That was
crazy.
Wow, what a...
If there were 20,000 people there, 19,999 were cheering, and Bill Burr's wife was giving Trump the double middle finger. Did you see that clip?
No, I didn't see it. But, I mean, aren't you... I'm just going to say this. Can't you show a little better class than that? I understand that politics is a dividing, divisive business. I get it. I understand all that. But can't you show a little bit better class than that, no matter what side of the aisle that you like to walk on and you like to support? Can't you show a little bit better than that? I mean, I would ask the guy, look, if it was your guy up there and he was getting the applause, right? And somebody else gave the double middle, what would you say? And I guarantee you it wouldn't be good. I guarantee it wouldn't be good. And so sometimes you got to look at yourself. You got to hold yourself to the same standard that you hold other people in those situations. But look, the only thing add to that, to have a little humor, would be the great comedian Sebastian Maniscalco, where he would say, if he saw that, he would just say, "Aren't you embarrassed? Aren't you embarrassed? Aren't you embarrassed?" I know the reason I'm thinking about Sebastian is because I know he was down in Atlantic City that weekend doing a show, because my former fighter and tremendous friend, just because he's a tremendous friend in person, one of my former fighters, Jimmy McMahon, who I actually retired undefeated because we had a little concern about a medical issue we weren't sure about, and life is too important to have any uncertainty, and he's healthy as heck, and he's successful, and he's a great father and great success in the business world and the working world, and I couldn't be proud of him as a human being, but we couldn't take a chance. He was like 14-0, I think, when I retired him, and he stuck with it. You know, I told him, this is it, all right? You know, I know you could go somewhere else and you could fight, you know, and but I'd like you to give me your word that, you know, I'm not letting you fight, because we can't take a risk. I mean, you know, it might turn out to be all right, but it might not. And if it might not, we can't even contemplate going there, you know? It's, you know, we can't even think about it. And he's got a beautiful family. He's got a kid, James, who's a good little boxer, and he has a twin, beautiful sister, and then another brother, and his great wife. Just a great family, and I'm just happy that he's doing real well, because, you know, his dream was cut short a little bit by fate, and by my decision not to let him fight anymore too. So I'm just glad that he's doing good, and I hope they had a good weekend out there with Sebastian. I'm sure they did, but that's how I was thinking about Sebastian. I know he was performing because they were going there.
Well, before we jump into the action over at the UFC, let me give a quick shout out to our friends over at Athletic Greens. one of our favorite products. I know, Teddy, I know you take it every day. I take Athletic Greens every single day. To me, it's the one supplement I don't dare start the day without. Athletic Greens is an all-in-one green drink. You take a scoop in the morning, and it's got all your vitamins, minerals, and everything you need for a healthy immunity system. Made from whole food sourced ingredients, which is the key. No synthetics. It's all made from real food products. Athleticgreens.com/Atlas. They'll send you 10 free travel packs with your first purchase. Again, athleticgreens.com/Atlas to get 10 free travel packs with your first purchase. And those travel packs are invaluable. I'll be taking them with me to the dinner in New York, needless to say. Let's jump into the UFC over at Madison Square Garden. Teddy, we'll start with first fight on the main card. We had Diego Lopes just blasting Pat Sabatini right out of the ring 90 seconds into the first round. Knocked him out with a barrage of punches. Not much to see here.
No, there is something to see, though. I'll tell you why. It's not the punch, at least from my perspective. As a trainer and an analyst, I don't just look at the punch. That's self-explanatory. If it hits right and the guy can punch, it does the damage it does, and sometimes it knocks the guy out or disables him enough to be finished. For me, I'm looking at how it landed, why it landed. See, I'm always looking at the science. Even though it might look barbaric, there's always science. So I'm looking at why did it land? And I'm of the belief, being in business of this business 50 years now, that most knockouts happen. It's not an accident. It's not luck. And most of them happen for just a couple reasons, like within a group of reasons, a very small group, like two or three. Either you're pulling straight back, you got your head too high, you pulled straight, you didn't move after your last punch, you stood there, you took a picture. One of those reasons. And I also look at the delivery system of how that punch got there. So I'm going to give a quick kudos to them, but I'm going to give a real quick breakdown. Again, at first glance, nothing to talk about. First round knockouts in the first two fights, and nothing to say, right? The guy got hit, the guy got knocked out. But I'm going to say that both of these knockouts in the first two fights, that they get caught and they come for the same reason. They get caught stepping out. The first one, Lopes versus Sabatini. Is it Sabatini or San? I thought it was San.
I'm going to say it was Sabatini, but give me a second. Sabatini, S-A-B-A-T-I-N-I, Sabatini.
Yeah, all right, so Sabatini, Lopes. First one, Lopes, he gets the takedown, or actually a throwdown, as he throws Sabatini to the floor. But Sabatini, he's behaving like a fighter, gets right up. But he probably, if he had more time to think about it, he'd probably rethink that, because he gets right up, and that's his downfall, really, because as he gets up and he moves out, he's vulnerable. You know, he's not set yet, and he's exposed, and Lopes knows it, and he follows him and catches him with, I think it was a right hand on his temple. And he drops him and then jumps on him and grounds and pounds him. So that's the part I want to bring out. That, yeah, the punch knocked him out, but the setup, he gets thrown to the floor on a takedown move or attempt, and then he gets up a little reckless and kind of forgets. I mean, it would be kind of like being you got thrown out of a bar. I know I use crazy analogies, but for me, they work. You get thrown out of a bar, you get thrown out of a place, and you're a little disoriented. And as soon as you get up from the sidewalk, you just run out to the street and you get hit by a car. That's that's a little brutal. That's a little rough. That's a rough analogy. But that's kind of what happened. He, you know, he gets thrown to the floor. He gets right up, starts to move away. Bang. He gets hit by, not a car, but he gets hit by a punch that puts him where it puts him. Then in the second fight, Benoit St. Denis catches...
Benoit St. Denis catches Matt the Steamroller Frivola. And one quick thing before you start, Teddy. I thought of you because as Frivola was going straight back in a line, I was like, every time I see someone do that, I always think of you telling them, there's a train coming. Yeah. Don't try to get off the tracks by running down the tracks. Just step to the side.
Well, that's why I preluded this whole conversation by saying, there's only a couple things that really get guys knocked out. If you really go over it the way I do, it's always for one of two or three reasons. And one of the main ones is pulling straight back, as they said, 2 minutes ago. So he goes straight back. Now, in boxing, you go straight back. I don't let guys go straight back from the wrong distance because you get caught with a punch, a hook, a right hand, whatever. But it's even worse in MMA because you could get caught with either a punch or a kick, So if it's a no-no in boxing pulling straight back, it has to be a no-no pulling straight back in UFC. And that's exactly what happened. He pulls straight back, and he doesn't get caught a left hook or right hand. He gets caught a kick, and he pays the ultimate price. So, and then the other one that I wanted to touch on was Andre and Dern. Because in the first round, Andre, again, it's there's not a lot of, it's not coincidence. It's not really... It's not just you landing a punch when certain people land more than others. It's because their technique is better. They're more aware of where the openings are and better trained to take advantage in those areas. And that was the case with Andrade and Dern. Andrade drops Dern twice. First with a counter shot in the first round, and just before the bell of the first round, she caught Dern in on the inside. She punched inside of Dern's wide shots at the end of the first round. So she punches inside at the end of the first round, and she drops her. Then the second round, Andrade drops Dern three times. First one, and it's always because of better technique and know-how. The first time, she drops her with a counter. The second one, she drops her punching inside of Dern's wide shots like she did in the first round. And the third time, she catches her again, going straight back. So she made her pay for technical flaws in all three. So it's not just that she's stronger, she's better puncher. She's got the better delivery, the better technique. And she uses it to be effective. And she was. Andrade is so strong. Obviously a very good striker. And Dern made a huge strategic mistake, Ken, striking with the much better striker when Dern's strength is in jiu-jitsu, on the mat.
That's right.
Like your son, that's where she's strong. That's, to use another analogy, that's like taking a knife to a gunfight. I mean, you're the much better jiu-jitsu person, grappler, everything down on the mat. Why are you gonna risk striking you know, again, you got to know your strengths. You got to know your weaknesses. You got to play to them. You got to get the geography that makes sense for you to play to those strengths or to avoid those weaknesses. I'll use another movie analogy. Dirty Harry, Clint Eastwood. He would say, a man must know his limitations. A man must know his Well, same thing. You have to know your strengths and your weaknesses. Can't let ego get involved. You know, how many times can you see these people say, oh, I'm going to beat her at her best. I'm going to show I can beat. I'm going to show I'm going to beat her or him at their game. Well, not such a good idea when it's over.
You know what it reminded me of sometimes, you know, when you talk about nerves, actually, you know, when people go in there and just say, like, F it, I'm just going to go in there and start winging punches. It's actually nervousness of trying to get the inevitable over with. That's the sense that I got from Dern, is that she might have been overcome by the moment, which would be surprising for someone who's so good. But that's what,
like,
it looked like.
Like a kamikaze. You're talking kamikaze stuff. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Reckless abandon. And you can almost predict when you go in. Why would you go 50-50 exchanging punches with someone who's the better stand-up fighter?
Ego.
That's what always surprises
ego.
Me.
We're touching
yes.
Ego.
And ego and fear.
Yeah.
Like, I want this over with. Yeah. And I'm nervous, so I'm just going to go for it.
That
and
could
it's
be
like
a toxic combination, why? Those two things. Yes. Yes.
It always makes me... That always comes to the forefront of what I'm watching when I see two guys, and let's say one guy's a better hooker, and the other guy's like, F you, I'm going to just throw hooks, and the guy gets knocked out, and you're like, you know he can hook better than you. Why are you doing that? But it's exactly what you would describe. It's like that kamikaze approach of like, I'm so nervous, let's just get this over with. Let's just do this, and I'll either catch or get caught. And inevitably, if the other guy is technically better at you than that in stand-up or hooking or whatever the case is, you're probably going to lose that 50-50 if that's how you're approaching it. You know, it's always surprising to me when someone would play to the other guy's strength. But you nailed it perfectly when you said it's the kamikaze approach. The nerves are taking over and you're like, I just want this over with.
Yeah. Don't be a kamikaze pilot out there, by the way, people. that's one of the lessons from Ken and Teddy today. Kamikaze, no. No good. No good. No kamikaze, Paula.
Well, let's get into the heavyweight interim title. Tommy Aspinall gets the win over Sergey Pavlovich.
Oh, by the way, going back to the MyBookie and that you got a little extra Christmas money, always full disclosure, I gave you that one. I gave you that. I had Aspinall, but I did not have to write one in the next one. I had Prochaska. See, always honest here. I had Prochaska
yep.
beating Pereira. But so you finished 1-1. You finished 1-1.
Yep. So Tom Aspinall brings it home to Manchester. Manchester now has two heavyweight champions boxing in Fury and the UFC heavyweight champion, all the titles residing in Manchester, with the exception of the other four heavyweight belts, which are in the Ukraine. But good fight right away. I mean, Jesus, you could feel it. You could cut the tension with a knife in there. These guys, there was no room for error, with both guys being like stand-up bomb slingers.
One of my tweets, really, and you talk about being on the money, but before it started, I said, this is like watching a lit fuse, a fuse that's been lit, and it's leading to a box of TNT. You're just wondering, when's it going to blow up? That's the only thing that you're wondering. You're not wondering anything else. You're just wondering, at what point does the fuse get to the box and of TNT and does it blow up? It turned out to be a short fuse. It turned out to be because sometimes the fuse could be 10 minutes, you know, 20 minutes, whatever. Like in a James Bond movie, you see the guy light the fuse. He takes off like 2 hours later, he's having a martini and, you know, and the fuse is just about to go. But this was a short fuse. And really, to me, that was the apropos tweet at that time. Like, And I'm surprised they didn't post it. I was like a little disappointed we didn't get it posted. I was.
You know what I love about you? I was. You've been the friggin' voice of boxing for 25 years, and you still get excited when the UFC puts you on during the broadcast. Whereas I'm like, never mind the tweet. He should be on there talking about the damn fights.
I was a little. Come on. A little. I was surprised, but it was. I was like, hey, come on, that was a good one. I should have been up there. Maybe I didn't get it up fast enough. Maybe that was the problem. But that's exactly what it was.
One quick thing. Pavlovich landed early, and I thought he got Tom Aspinall's attention. He really clipped him a good shot. I forget the exact sequence, but I remember thinking, oh, shit, Pavlovich is fast. That was a good shot, and Tom was rocked. But credit to Tom Aspinall.
Well, the thing about Pavlovich, he's always set. He's only got that one dimension, but he's always set for that dimension with his feet. Always ready. He's like the rifleman, you know, where the bullet is always in the chamber. He's ready. And I think that helped in the end. I think, and you're right, he did get his attention. I think that helped Aspinall in the end because it really put him in DEFCON 4 or 5, where he was at full alert now, and he knew whatever he did had to be really, really on the button, had to be concise, and he had to execute it, bang! When the moment would come, it reminded him that when the moment comes, I have to execute, I can't miss, I got to take advantage of the first opportunity I get, because if I don't, I might not get another opportunity. I really think that was kind of the message sent to him by the little nick of that right hand from Pavlovich.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that I would say is, and it's not a surprise with all the guys in the UFC, but when you see two guys in there right at the start, they both look tough. Then you see a guy get clipped and you're like, oh, he realizes he's in there tough. And you could see him even trying to get away, trying to look for a way out, even if it's very subtle. But with some of these guys, you see them get clipped and they're like, okay, you got me there. And they're right back in the pocket and focused. And Aspinall was able to turn it around and come back. But man, it's just, there's no place to hide in the UFC. These guys are so friggin' tough. Even when you catch them and you think you might have them, like, questioning his desire to be in there, he's like, nope, coming right back at you with even more focus. And what an entertaining fight. Granted, it wasn't very long, but I loved every second of it. Like I said, you could cut the tension with a knife.
Yeah, as far as the breakdown of the fight, it wasn't a lot to it, but again, there's always the detail. And the detail was Aspinall used basics. He moved laterally to keep Pavlovich. Yeah, Pavlovich from getting set because he's dangerous. And then he used his jab, you know, to set up the right hand. And he stepped in. And there was something that happened here that maybe people missed. But he caught Pavlovich as he was throwing his own jab, which left the door open for the right hand. He was throwing his own jab, and the right hand of Aspinall came just at the right moment where the left hand wasn't there anymore. It was out, extended, because he started to throw his jab, Blovich that is, and he, as I said, he left the door wide open for the right hand of Aspinall to come in and land. And it did. He came in, landed, and you know, he took care of business. So again, basics. Just good, solid basics, timing. And as I said before, to your point, I think that he knew the danger that he was in there with Aspinall, and he knew that when he got an opportunity he had to act on it. There might not be a second chance. And he did. He acted on it. And he did a terrific job. He took the fight on 17 days notice. Again, it shows you that if you believe in yourself, even if it's not the best of circumstances, sometimes you got to take the chance. And you know what you're taking a chance on? You're taking a chance on yourself. You got to just take the chance. You prepared your whole life for this. It's not full time, but you're you've been prepared your whole life for it. This is what you do. You don't know if this opportunity is ever going to come again. And you know what? Sometimes you just got to step up and say, hey, I'm betting on myself. I'm betting. I'm not saying if it doesn't make any sense, but obviously he was in good enough shape, and he had enough belief in himself that, hey, sometimes this is destiny knocking at the door. This is my destiny. Everyone has a different destiny. Everyone has a different path. Everyone has a different journey. Mine is to do it on 17 days. Bang, I'm going to make it work. And he made it work. So, and the thing that I loved about him, really, Aspinall, he's a great guy. The other guy's a great guy, too. They represent himself with nothing but class and honesty. I loved him for that. And I just love how honest, because this is something that's in my wheelhouse. I talk about it all the time, the mental side. How honest Aspinall was about being scared. He said, I was scared to death. And I was scared to death, he said. But he used that fear. He didn't let it use him. He controlled it. He didn't let it control him. And it was a great teaching moment. And I talk about that all the time when I get asked to go to the football, NFL teams, to college teams. Now they're my team, the UConn Huskies, national champs, baby. You know, there's no other team in national. There's no other team in college basketball, just the Huskies. The Huskies. They're mine and my family's team. And I spoke to them again this year. We're going to take the title again this year because they got the best damn coach on the planet. And Danny Hurley, who will be there Thursday night at the Dr. Atlas Foundation 27th dinner.
Oh, he's coming?
Yeah, he's coming. He's coming. And not only does he have the best athletes, he's got the best human beings. And to me, character wins. Yeah, talent gets you there. Don't get me wrong. Talent gets you there, but character gets you across the finish line, and character keeps you there. And he's got character, kids, and it's not an accident. That's what he recruits. So, and coaches. So anyway, when I talk, whether it's in the NFL, whether it's there, wherever it is, when I get asked to go and speak, I talk about fear is so it's such a taboo thing that people don't talk about, but they all feel it. So what they do is they push it away, they try to ignore it, and then when you try to ignore it, it's still there. And it can do damage to you. And it does do damage to you. So you can't ignore it. You have to understand it. You understand that it's there. Nature put it, God put it there for a reason. To have you prepared. But you have to control it. But it's there for a reason. And you got to stop thinking of fear. And that's the great thing about Aspinall. He taught that by talking about this. You got to stop, Ken, talking about or thinking about fear as an enemy. You know what I tell my people when I talk to them? It's your best friend. It's your best friend. And embrace it. Use it. Let it have you ready. Let it have your adrenaline going. Let it have you sharp. Let it have you alert. All pistons striking at the right time. But what you don't want to let it do is take control of you. Take you to the wrong place. Control it. Use it. It was put there for a reason. The only reason, darn it, we all get across the street every day as we look both ways to make sure a car ain't coming and you don't get killed. Why do you do that? Because you're afraid. Nobody puts it that way. Oh, Teddy, that's... No. That's fear. You're afraid of getting killed, and it's a good thing to be afraid of. So you look both ways, and then you know that you're okay. Same thing in other aspects of life, in other places of life. Understand it's there for a reason. Control it. Use it. Let it be your friend. Let it take you to the promised land. Let it make you as great as you can be. And that's what Aspinall did. And I loved it. He talked about it so freely. And he said what I always say. He said, anyone who says they're not afraid, they're crazy. And I add to it, I say they're either a liar. I think he might have said that, actually. But I always say, anyone who says they're not afraid in these kind of circumstances, when fear should be there, when there should be that kind of alertness and, readiness in that way, anyone who says they're not afraid, they're one of two things. They're either freaking something wrong with them and they should go to a doctor to find out, or they're a liar. So I thought that was a great part of it. He's a great guy to root for. You know, it's Michael Brisbane. I was happy for him. He's his friend. He's a great commentator and former, you know, champion, Hall of Famer. He was happy. You know, he was there with him, and he was, you know, he was thrilled. So it was nice to see the two of them share that camaraderie and share his victory as friends and as both champions. You know, Brisbane, a former champion. It was good. It was a nice fight, and I tell you, the bookies had that one picked pretty close, right? They had that one. They know what they're doing. They had that almost even money, right? I don't know who was the slight favorite, yep. But it was damn close.
Yeah, it was very close.
You know, the one thing I want to say before I finish,
very close.
That fight going in reminded me of the movie The Cinderella Man, which depicted a true story of James Braddock fighting Max Baer. At the time, Braddock was supposed to have no chance. Max Baer was just a killer puncher. And actually, he killed somebody in the ring, or somebody died in the ring. But he was a big right-hand puncher, and it was so dangerous that Braddock knew that he couldn't make a mistake. He could not make a mistake, otherwise he would have got caught that right hand. And he wound up, the only difference in making that analogy, Braddock won a decision to pull off the upset and to beat the great puncher, Max Baer, and win the heavyweight title. And he was the Cinderella Man because nobody expected it. And a few months before that, he was actually on home relief, welfare, if you will, because the government was... because he was, you know, the depression had hit, and they were in a bad place, and he was actually on home relief. And then when he won a title, he took what a man he was. He went back to the government office where he got the home relief, and he returned every dime that they had given him. That's special. That's a man of pride. And he went back and he said, I appreciate that, you know, I was given this help when I needed it. I don't need it. And he gave it back. Anyway, they did I think Russell Crowe was the star. And they did this movie, The Cinderella Man, again, depicting that fight. That fight came to mind because in some ways it was similar. That, you know, Aspinall was Braddock, and... his opponent was, Provaska. He was Max Baer. You know, he was the guy with the dangerous right hand that could put your lights out. So it was funny because when I tweeted that this reminds me of that fight, I was basically saying if it's going to follow suit and if it's going to, you know, if it's really going to wind up being reminiscent of identifying with that fight, then that means that Aspinall has to win because he's Braddock. And sure enough, he won. So, and one other thing I want to say before we get to the main fight. I love Bruce Buffer. I don't know. There's something about that guy, his energy, that... And he comes off so authentic. I know it's, you know, some people say it's over the top, they can't stand it. But he's gotten to the point now in this business where so many people are trying to reinvent the wheel as ring announcers, Ken, that Bruce and Michael Buffer and Jimmy Lennon, I'll put him in there too, they come off as really the only authentic and really original voices in that industry out there nowadays. I mean, there's some good ones. I tell you, it's like everyone else is just forcing it. It's like they're trying to reinvent the wheel. It's like they're trying to, you know, they're copying, obviously, to a degree that happens. Everybody copies the originals a little bit, but then you got to put your own touch on it. Okay. It's just coming across like it's too this too forced. Like, it's almost too much pressure on them to, like, be, to outdo those guys. You're not going to outdo those guys. That's what you got to understand. Just be who you are, but you're not going to outdo them because they're the originals. Yeah, you know, nobody's outdoing Coca-Cola and Hershey's chocolate. I mean, they're the originals. So I it just struck me. I had to say something. You know, I had to say something. People know that I'm going to say something if it's in my craw. But Bruce and Michael Buffer, Jimmy Lennon, they're the only authentic sounds out there anymore. And they are the originals. You know, of Jimmy Lennon, of course, his father came before him. But there's just such a plethora, I guess, of ring announcers that everyone's feeling the pressure to, you know, to try to outdo somebody. I don't know. It's just sometimes, you know, and then sometimes you just shake your head. Like, you hear some of them, and you're like, oh, God. Why don't your wife tell you that, you know, it's a little too much. It's like you're trying a little too hard right now. You know, just, you know, find your spot, find your niche, you know. But man, I don't know. Sometimes it's just, I had to mention that, but thank goodness for the originals. You know, and that doesn't mean that somebody, that there's not someone else to carry the baton. I'm all for that, to hand it off to. There always is, but right now it's this that track trying to get the baton, that lane that's trying to get the baton. It's overcrowded. It's you know, people are running in. People are running themselves over. They're running over each other, trying to get to that baton. But anyway, that's talking about batons. Let's get to the last fight. Prochaska and Pereira, the main event.
Alex Pereira knocks out Jiří Prochaska in the second round. You know, fight was pretty much what you would have expected. Prochaska going for some takedowns here and there, and Pereira doing a great job of keeping him at distance. That leg kick is so vicious. I mean, he destroys people with that leg kick. Daniel Cormier was talking about, he posted a video earlier in the week clowning around with Pereira, and Pereira was just kicking him in the calf. But I mean, really in slow motion. And even when he did it in slow motion, Daniel at the time was like, Jesus, that hurt. But you could tell he's really weaponized that low kick to the calf. He destroyed Izzy's legs in both fights, which is even more miraculous that Izzy was able to stop him.
You know why he does it? You know why he does it? Besides the obvious, he wants to take your ability to strike away and ability to have power and to set, because the power comes from the floor. It comes from the basement. It comes from the foundation. If you don't have a foundation, up top, it's not going to be able to do anything. So the power in a punch comes from the legs, from downstairs. And if your legs aren't there, then you got no power. So obviously he does it for that reason. But there's a psychological reason too. He's a great striker. He's a kickboxing champion. He's a great, great striker. He's sending a message. There's only one striker in this ring, and it's me. And he's almost forcing you to go somewhere else. Like, he's sending a message, you know, where, hey, there's only one gun here. You know, like if you're going up against Billy the Kid, you know, there's only one fastest in the West. There's not two. And everyone thinks they're going to be the fastest in the West until they meet the fastest in the West. Well, guess what? You just met the fastest in the West. There's gun battles going one way. There is no gun battle. You know, there is no shootout. There's just me. I'm the only one going to be doing the shooting over here. And really, I feel that he's sending, it's part of him. It's so, that is such an important part of him, his psyche, his identity, that he's a great, great striker. And that there's only room for one. So right away, he disables your freaking legs, and he says, in case you had a thought that you were going to also be a striker tonight, get rid of it. Because, again, there's only one gun in the West. There's only one Billy the Kid, and it's me. And there ain't going to be nothing else. And he sends that message. Again, it does the job physically, but I think it's a mental message, too, that he's sending out there. And I tweeted before the fight that Prochazka is bigger, naturally bigger guy, but Pereira has the power to hurt him. And I said, you know, as I always, one of my cliches now, punches are born, they're not made, no matter what weight you're at. And that he would carry the power up in that weight. I also said that Pereira needs to stay on his feet and he needs to move and then catch Prochazka coming in with a counter. And that's exactly what happened, obviously. And I wouldn't be saying it this way unless I tweeted it before the results, not after the results. Anybody could be a Monday morning quarterback, obviously, after the Sunday afternoon football games. But first round, Prochazka, as you said, he has his legs damaged by Pereira, you know, designed to make it hard for him to set to punch, right? And take away his power and his ability to kick. I think also what he did besides taking his punching power away and discouraging him and sending that message, he knew that one of the weapons of Prochazka is his awkwardness, his being where he can come from unexpected angles. I think that's part of what makes him so difficult and dangerous, is that he is so unpredictable. And by taking his legs away, not only did he take his power away, but he took the ability for him to kick, to be awkward, you know, to do these unorthodox things. He took some of that away. In other words, he made him less unorthodox. He made him less awkward. He made him less dimensional. And he took some of those dimensions away. And I think that was part of the plan too. And that's to my point that I always say the top guys are cerebral. They're not just the toughest. They're also the smartest. And I thought it was brilliant. I just thought it was brilliant that Pereira did that. And I'm giving him credit for it because I believe he did. For all those reasons, that it would make Prochazka more one-dimensional and eliminate, as I said, some of the awkward, unexpected things he does. Now, it took most of the first round, but Prochazka finally got the geography he needed and took Pereira to the ground where he had the edge after absorbing a lot of kicks. And Pereira, you know, by having him on the ground, Pereira couldn't strike, obviously. You know, he could not use his greatest weapon, which is his ability to strike, to counterpunch. Then his second round, as, you know, I had said, and I had put out there as a prediction, that Pereira would be looking for a counterpunch by keeping range, keeping distance, moving a little bit, and then just looking for a counter opportunity. And then, of course, he got it. He got Prochazka coming in careless. He landed great counter shots, two of them, the right hand first, and then a beautiful, beautiful, short, Joe Louis-esque left hook. I mean, it was like a Joe Louis left hook. Joe Louis, to me, was the greatest heavyweight of all time. Muhammad Ali, right there, second. I know that'll bother a lot of people, but it doesn't bother me. That's what I believe. And Joe Louis, I think, was the greatest finisher in heavyweight history. When he hurt you, goodbye, sayonara, you're done. It's over. And he got rid of you. And part of the reason was he threw short punches. And this was a Joe Louis-type short left hook that was just not as beautiful as it was damaging. And it, you know, obviously it finished him. And why does a short left hook finish somebody? First of all, you don't see it. It's compact. It's all power. It's a real snap in the shoulder. And it's pinpointed. At first, it looked like a fast stoppage. But then you could see that he slumped forward, Ken, on the floor as Pereira was, you know, jumped on him and was, you know, going with the hammer fist. And when he slumped forward, I want to give the referee, I tear these refs apart when they do a bad job. I want to give him credit. At first, people thought that it was too quick, but on further review, it was anything but. And the referee might have saved his life. I mean, the referee did a great job stopping it where he did. Otherwise, he would have got hurt. And Prochazka said it to his credit. Again, these warriors are so honest. These are honest warriors, whether they're doing the conquering or being conquered at that particular time. They all have class and just completely honest warriors. And he said it. He came right out. You know, a lot of people might say, oh, no, I could have kept going, whatever. He said afterwards, nah, I was gone. He said, I was gone. The referee saved me. I was done. I basically he didn't know where he was. So it was like I said earlier, it wasn't the night of the Condor. It was the night of the KO. And that's exactly how it ended. It started with the KOs in the main part of the main event, main card, and it finished with KO.
Yeah, incredible card, action-packed. We could do with some big boxing matches, that's for sure. But that's really all we've got in terms of fights. We've got a fight night next week. Let me just check the boxing calendar. I don't think there's any big boxing fights coming up until December 8th when our man Regis Progre is back in action against the great Devin Haney, and we'll do a fight plan for that one to get everyone up to speed and be prepared to what to look for in that fight. I think we'll do that, and we'll do the Andrade versus Benavidez fight plan. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about from this past weekend's action, Teddy? I don't think there's any big boxing coming up. Shakur Stevenson's in action against Edwin De Los Santos. I can't imagine that's going to be competitive.
No, let me tell you something, Ken. I'm gonna back you up on that one. I'm gonna straighten you out on that one. That one's gonna be potentially a lot more competitive than you just said, because Stevenson's opponent, pronounce his name again, so I don't want to butcher it.
Stevens, Edwin De Los Santos.
What's the first part?
De Los Santos.
Yeah, De Los Santos. I want to say it right. But anyway, De Los Santos is he can fight. He can punch. He's got fast hands, and he might have some of the nuances that you need to fight such a difficult style and talented guy like Stevenson, where Stevenson will control range on you. You know, he won't make the most exciting fights, but he's very effective in pitching, you know, pitching a shutout, not letting men get on base, you know, taking the bat out of your hands. Where you go in 6 inches, he goes back 9. He looks to counter. He's good defensive. He's very cautious. You know, he doesn't take a lot of risk. He doesn't waste much. He's a difficult guy to look good against and a difficult guy to deal with. His style is a son of a gun, and he's got talent. He's got the amateur pedigree with the silver medal. He's got all that. But De Los Santos, I'm not saying he's going to win, but I'm going to say he's going to represent himself well. I'm going to say that.
You want the line from our friends at my bookie?
I'm sure my bookie will appreciate it.
Shakur Stevenson, -1500. De Los Santos, +650. Yeah. Over under, over -375, under +230. So they definitely think it's going the distance.
And yeah, Stevenson Shakur's don't stop guys. Stevenson don't knock out guys. But look, I like the over, but I would take a
-375.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying I'm.
Wood.
Yeah, I'm not saying that's not where my play would be. I like the over,
gotcha.
But my play would be on the underdog. You know, nothing big, but with those odds, put a couple peanuts. You know, put a peanut or two, as Bill Krakenberger would say, the handicapper, my friend from Las Vegas, that does the handicapping in the sports world, and Alan Boston also, who's a tremendous college basketball, not only handicapper, he's actually a legend. You look him up, Google his name, Alan Boston. But anyway, and a good man. If you want to just have a little something on it to have a little play, I would put a little something on De Los Santos because you're getting those kind of odds, you get something back. And again, he knows how to fight. He's a southpaw, which, you know, can help him a little bit. Even though Stevenson don't have really problems with southpaws, he probably faced a million of them in the amateurs with 250 amateur fights or whatever he has. So that shouldn't be a problem. But he is a southpaw. He's got long, rangy arms. He's wiry. And he does certain things I like in this matchup. One of the things that I like that he does is he doubles and triples up his jab when looking to close the gap. That's a good thing against a guy like Stevenson, who you're going to have to close the gap. If you throw one jab, you ain't closing it. You're just not. Yeah, you're not getting there. You're going to fall short and you're going to get counted. If you throw two or three, you got a shot to get there if you're stepping in quick enough. And he closes the gaps pretty fast. Pretty fast. And if he can use a double jab to close the gap at the right time when Stevenson steps out and he can step with him, he might have a little good fortune in spots to get a little something. He's going to have to go to the body too, because with Stevenson, you know, you're better off going to the body for two reasons. One, the body's a little easier to hit than the head. And two, if you go to the body and you're effective enough to the body, you can take some of the legs away, which Stevenson depends on, obviously, to be successful, to avoid you, to get out, to create range, to create counter opportunities, to be defensively, you know, secure. So I like this Los Santos. You know, we'll see what happens. But most of those fights, I wouldn't walk on the counter to watch Stevenson, because just, you know, if you're a boxing aficionado, and I guess I am, but you know, kind of like I always use the same analogy of you go to a baseball game, you want to see home runs, then you don't want to see a pitcher who hits the corners. Greg Maddux, you know, Paulie Malignaggi. We were on Pro Box the other day breaking it down. And Malignaggi said, "Teddy, you're talking about Greg Maddux." Yeah, you remember Greg Maddux from the Cubs, you know, and from the Atlanta Braves, where he didn't have a fastball over 80 miles an hour. But he changed speeds. He hit the corners. You know, he took the bat out of your hands. He kept you off balance. And if you like that, if you go to a ball game and you want to see that, well, then you like Stevenson, because that's what Stevenson does. He's Greg Maddux in that way. And that's a great talent and a great ability to do that. But if you like to see, you know, if you like to see a bonfire when you watch a fight, then you're not getting a bonfire. You might get a couple sparks, maybe. But you're not getting anything close to a bonfire when you watch him. So maybe De Los Santos can make it a little closer to a bonfire. Because like I said, he knows what he's doing. He's got quick hands. He can punch. He's only got one loss. I think he's got the confidence to believe that he, you know, that he can do it. So we'll see. So I think it'll be a little bit more interesting than you had said, and that most people would think. Hopefully, I just gave somebody a reason to take a peek at it, and hopefully, it doesn't turn out the other way, where Stephenson just whitewashes them, you know, in a completely boring one-sided fight.
Yeah. Well, Teddy, that's all we got for this week. You got anything else before we say goodbye? I know you're busy getting ready for the dinner, and like I said, we'll all be there on Thursday, and we'll have two sets of two tickets available. Follow our social media channels, and Rob will get some details up there as to how you can access those tickets.
No, that's it for me. I think we covered this like a blanket or a quilt or something along those lines. So I think we covered everything that had to be covered.
That's it. Well, thanks everyone for being with us. Like I said, follow the social channels if you're interested in those tickets to the Dr. Atlas dinner. And we'll be back next week, per usual, with a full breakdown of all the action. Please don't forget to subscribe to the YouTube channel if you're watching on YouTube. We appreciate you.
Be good, everyone.